If you haven't tackled your holiday shopping yet, no worries. Just go to Uncommon Goods. They have unique, hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Some of my favorite things are steel outdoor citronella lanterns that you can personalize, and fishing pole-inspired marshmallow roasters. I'd use them for my wood-burning fireplace. Whatever your choices are, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. If you'd rather give an experience, you can find those too. They're more than virtual classes. They're unexpected opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways. Tarot card reading, cooking and mixology, gardening, and so much more. Plus, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. To date, they've donated more than $3 million. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/datingwhilegray. That's uncommongoods.com/datingwhilegray for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Are there other people out there experiencing a kind of ambivalence about sexuality, despite what all the articles about hot sex into your 80s are telling us?
There was less and less bad sex until there was no sex at all.
I don't know what it's like really out there, but I'm wondering if there's a lot of expectation on the sexual part, because I wouldn't want to do that right away.
Maybe we're doing it, maybe we're not. Maybe we want to, maybe we don't. We might be thinking about it. Sex on my mind. That's this episode of Dating While Gray, the grown-up's guide to love, sex, and relationships. I'm Laura Stassi. I talked with a Canadian listener recently. Let's call her Kate. She's in her early 60s. When Kate was in college, she met a young man at church. They fell in love, got married, started a family. Kate wanted it to last forever, but gradually it became apparent to her that it could not.
Well, the first time that I really seriously thought about ending the marriage was, I think around 7 years in. I had 3 children by then, and he one night in bed confessed that he had been looking at pornography. So for me, that was huge. I hated pornography. I still do. I don't like what it does to men. I don't like what it represents. And I felt like it was an invasion on my marriage. I felt like he was actually cheating on me. I think the marriage bed should be kept pure. And that means from pornography as well. And so I was ready to leave.
You weren't suspicious or anything, but he felt burdened, I guess, and wanted to tell you that he had been looking at pornography.
That's right. That's right. I was not suspicious. He told me, and I had a shock reaction. I actually called my friend who is a psychologist. I called her in the middle of the night, just shaking. Like, right after he told me, I was shaking, and I was in shock because I just felt like it was the hugest attack. Like, this was the end of my marriage, is what I felt. Marriage as I pictured it, I should say. A lot of women will put up with pornography. A lot of women don't mind. They don't care. But for me, it was super offensive.
I'm just curious, do you think that your reaction would have been the same if he had confessed that he had feelings for a real-life person?
Absolutely. It would have been the same. I think, especially back then, I was very insecure because I had being hurt many times. So I was looking for a forever love and someone to feel super secure with. And that was, again, just whipped out from underneath me.
A betrayal.
It was a betrayal. It is a betrayal. What I did the very next day was I started every day taking out thousands of dollars to go and take the kids and leave. The bank swallowed my card and I couldn't get any more money. By this time, he caught on and said, well, let's go to counseling. So we did. And I also demanded that he get tested by a psychologist who specializes in sexual deviance to make sure he wasn't sexually deviant and a danger to my kids. And he did. He jumped through all of the hoops and I stayed.
I'm thinking some people might wonder, was it, I hate to say, vanilla pornography?
It was. And I think it still is. Fast forward to now, he's still addicted.
If he hadn't told you, would you have thought, okay, why aren't we as close physically as we used to be? Or did his behaviors with you seem different?
Yes. At first, it was demanding more and more and more and couldn't get enough. And I was going, hold on. And he would get insulted, you know, you're not giving me enough, and complain and everything. But then after a while, like years later, let's say 15 years later, it was more a loss of interest, or try not to get too graphic, but during, I would notice it was a lot different. It was not a closeness. It was more a shallow, mechanical act.
You didn't feel like it was bringing you closer emotionally?
No. It was a duty. It was a task. Get it done and get away from me. That kind of thing.
But you stayed. I mean, it was only recently that you left, yes?
That's right. He jumped through all those hoops. He had to go to see a psychologist. We had to go to marriage counseling. He had to work on his problem. And, you know, the whole time I thought he was, and I thought he'd be getting better. And I didn't even want to talk about it because it brought a trauma response in me to even talk about it. So I would rarely bring it up because I'd get so unsettled. But then I would always find a magazine, or I'd get some indicator that it was still a problem throughout all those years. And that would send me far away again, like just emotionally.
You referred to yourself as being separated for like 7 years. And I'm wondering if there came a point in your marriage where you sort of officially separated, but were living under the same roof? Or was it more like, okay, as soon as I can, I'm out of here, kind of a separation?
I said, as soon as I can, I'm out of here. And that was more than 7 years ago. It was really hard. But finally, one night, I went to him and said, I want to separate. And I thought, naively, that when you say that to someone, they leave. Whenever someone has said that to me, I just left. But he didn't leave.
No.
I went to an attorney right away, signed her up, gave her a retainer, and told her what I wanted, to be legally separated. And you can stay in the same home. So she registered the date that I told her, and that's basically a legal date when I petitioned for separation. That's when it started. He still wouldn't leave. He started counseling on his own. He signed us up for marriage retreats, things like that. I did go to one marriage retreat, which was really good. I was surprised. They told me, to my surprise, either way, it's your decision if you want to stay or you want to go. You work on your stuff. He works on his stuff. And if you come together in the middle someday, that's, you know, great. So it was freeing because this was a Christian marriage retreat. So for them to say that was very freeing, because that's another thing that held me back. I felt guilty.
It sounds like you felt like you would be letting God down too, that religion was very important to you.
Absolutely. That was a big one. So I actually felt like I was turning my back on God, which was a bad time to not have God in my life. And I'm just lately, like this is 7 years later, I'm just lately a little bit beginning to see him in my life again, him working in spite of me. I'm starting to turn around and feel a little bit of the light on my face, a little bit.
No, I like that expression, feel the light on my face. That's beautiful. So for the past 7 years, you were separated, living under the same roof, but it sounds like at least your husband was hoping that things would get better, or no?
Absolutely. And he's still hoping that. He still refuses to believe that I'm going, even though I've now bought a house and he gave me money to pay for it. And little by little, things are disappearing out of that old house. I'm renovating this house. It's almost ready. I probably will move at the end of the month. But he's still, every single time he says goodbye to me, he says, I love you. Have a good day. He always says, I love you. He buys flowers for every occasion. He just pours it on because he so desperately doesn't want me to leave. It's not in his vernacular that marriages ever end. I think it's a big awakening to him. And he has been, on the positive side, getting a lot of help, though he's still not over his problem. He goes to a men's group now. So I'm grateful for all of those things. But at this point, I really feel like our relationship is killed. It's gone. I love him as a person, but not romantically. I don't know if I could ever go there again.
Yeah, I just feel like sometimes, I don't know, I don't want to get discussion about religion, but sometimes it feels to me that churches can really cause a lot of damage.
I think a lot of Christian men have sex issues because it was painted to be such a big deal. You know, you get married, you have to wait till you get married, and it's so special. And it was almost like a wife is a purchase. You know, I purchased this so that I can have that all the time for free and however much I want. Whereas if you can just have it, it's no big deal. I tried very hard to meet his every demand for years. It was exhausting and not fun.
Have you even thought about what another relationship for you might look like?
Oh, yeah, of course. I like men. They're fun. I would love to date. It's not that I'm frigid, but just that I am afraid. You know, what do men, are they all involved in pornography? Are they all wired that way now? I don't know.
I think it's understandable that Kate's wondering about dating and expectations around sex. She was married for a long time, and in that relationship, they didn't have a good track record for talking about it. That's not uncommon. I want to bring in someone who can help all of us get comfortable with sex talk. Her name is Anna Marti. She lives in Portland, Oregon, and for over 30 years, Anna's helped singles and couples in her work as an intimacy coach.
You know what I always say is it either begins a conversation or ends a conversation. The real short, like PG-rated answer is, I want to support people in relaxing how they're showing up around sex and relationships, in contrast to some kind of cultural standard or what they read in books or what they hear in podcasts, right?
Before we get like really into it, I want to first ask you for your definition of sex, because what I'm finding is a lot of people have a very perhaps narrow view of sex that maybe we need to expand as we get older.
Sex is, you know, if I had 100 people in the room, I'd probably have 100 different answers. And often that's determined by gender and history. But the way I like to define it is it's more about desire and satisfaction rather than any kind of objective-oriented behaviors.
So I'm hearing from listeners on all kinds of issues related to sex, and it seems like two general themes are emerging. One is an ambivalence about having a sex life or having the same kind of sex life that we had when we were younger. And the other one is a concern about potential partner expectations because we've been off the market for a while.
You know, I think the most consistent factor in the statement that I can give you is a lot of people have ambivalence about sex is because their sex they're having isn't worth wanting. Or historically, I mean, I just worked with someone yesterday who came off of a 20-year marriage, and for 20 years, nothing about it was pleasurable. There was criticism, there was expectation. And if that's your history, why would you be interested in more of that? If you've never had sex that was pleasurable, nourishing, enjoyable, why seek help about it?
Just give up.
Yeah, give up. I mean, like, where's the data that it's going to be better than what it was? And do I want to go through that again?
Okay. And what would you say to someone like that?
Well, a number of things. Assuming this person is getting ready to date again, I would help her with communication skills and that she would practice, he would practice in my office because it feels very, very scary to talk about things that we want. We were all absent on that day of school where they handed out the textbook for the successful erotic life. The first is, right, kind of developing, it's more than courage. I call it this internal capacity to be able to speak, listen, and experience what's awkward, uncomfortable, sometimes super frightening, while cultivating a felt sense of open-hearted connection. And it's not a cognitive, like, let me learn how to say the right things. I mean, I could even invite you into this exercise. When you think about talking to a potential partner about becoming more intimate, what do you notice in your body? Does your throat kind of get a little tight? Does your heart beat more quickly? You know, is your respiration more challenged? Basically, we go into a sympathetic nervous system response, fight, flight, fear, collapse. And it's like we've left the area of our brain that can make sense. So I want to support people in cultivating a connection to their nervous system and their physical bodies so they can have those awkward conversations and have a good time and really enjoy it.
I'm just thinking there are some people, men and women, who just don't want to have sex, and so they don't want to bring up a conversation. Or some people might think, I do want to have sex. I have no problems having sex, so why talk about it? Why not just do it?
Lots of reasons, especially with a possibly new partner. And I think, I mean, I've been married three times. I'm a really good wife. I've done it really well.
Practice makes perfect.
I know, right? I think I got that from my mother. You know, what you do as a woman is you get married. So I did that until I realized, maybe I don't have to do that anymore. But as far as talking about it, I'll start with your first example. This person that's not interested in sex at all. To be able to say that out of the gate, you're going to, first of all, decide if this is someone that's a match as far as wanting to go out with. So if I don't communicate to you, I'm really enjoying your company. These are the things that I do enjoy, and this is what I'm looking for. But what you can count on is I'm not interested in any kind of sexual engagement anymore. And maybe that needs to be defined as well.
Hi, Laura. I'm 67 and 10 years divorced from a 22-year marriage. I did some online dating at first, but now do little to none because I feel like I'm either asexual or gray sexual, and I don't think that anyone would want to be in a relationship with me because of that.
Gray sexual. That's a new one for me. I had to look it up. It's a label for people who rarely experience sexual attraction, or the attraction they feel is really low key. Okay, you know I want to come up with a different term for it. I've reclaimed the word gray as a vibrant thing. Anyway, we'll hear from two more listeners on the topic of sex, plus more from intimacy coach Anna Marti. That's all after the break. It's that time of year for gift giving and for goal setting. Know what fits both categories? Learning a new language with Rosetta Stone. It's the trusted language learning program for 30 years, available on desktop or as an app. And it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. They offer 25 languages with fast acquisition designed for long-term retention. Plus, the built-in True Accent feature gives you feedback on your pronunciation. Rosetta Stone is also convenient. Learn anytime, anywhere, on your own schedule. And here's an amazing value. A lifetime membership offers access to all 25 language courses. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a short time, Dating While Gray listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership holiday special. This offer will not last long. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your holiday offer at rosettastone.com/today today for yourself or as a gift that keeps giving. Okay, women, who among us has not had hormonal issues? We're not only dealing with changes our bodies go through, but also hormonal disruptors in our environment. The good news is there's help. It's by Happy Mammoth, and it's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And maybe the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews of Hormone Harmony. And there are more than 30,000 reviews to date. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DATINGWHILEGRAY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DATINGWHILEGRAY for 15% off today. I love this time of year because whether it's a pullover or a button-up, I love sweaters. Quince is my go-to site. They're known for Mongolian cashmere sweaters priced from $50. In fact, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because they partner directly with top factories. That cuts out the cost of the middleman, allowing the savings to be passed on to customers like you and me. And Quince works only with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing processes. So check out their sweaters. They also have beautiful leather jackets and so much more. Get cozy in Quince's high-quality wardrobe essentials. Go to quince.com/datingwhilegray for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/datingwhilegray to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/datingwhilegray.
Before we hear more from intimacy coach Anna Marti, I want to share excerpts from two emails I received. With permission from the writers, we're using voice actors to read them.
I'm almost 71 and I've been married twice. My second husband died about 4 years ago. We were very much in love, but there were issues, including the fact that he was Christian and I became a non-believer after menopause. Without going into a lot of history, thanks to therapy, I'm now becoming the person I was never allowed to be. I'm diving into my creative side more than ever. I have no desire for a long-term relationship. I would love a relationship without any commitment at all. It could be a man or a woman, but I'm starting to prefer women, as long as they share my love of music.
I've been divorced for 15 years. My last relationship is with a woman 10 years younger. Like me, she's into ultra marathons. Me being in my late 50s, there are not many women my age who are into those, or even marathons for that matter. So it was nice to have someone to train with and be a plus one for special occasions. She's super cute, and I had an overwhelming physical attraction to her. We lived together for 6 years, but it probably shouldn't have lasted more than two. There were a few red flags, and sex was a major one. To be honest, sex was subpar at the beginning, and it didn't improve over time. There was less and less bad sex until there was no sex at all. Tried talking about it a couple of times, but she didn't express her feelings about why she had no interest. So I really am clueless about her lack of sex drive.
I asked the second emailer if he had maybe linked his partner's younger age with greater expectations about sex, and he said no. Studies have shown that aging is not a barrier to sexual intimacy, though accommodations might be required.
Yeah, for many reasons, medical reasons, some people are unable to have the conventional, you know, sex or objective oriented orgasm, but they want cuddling, they want snuggling, they want kissing. And I want my clients and your audience to be able to communicate about that in a way that's connecting, because that's what we're doing when we're dating someone. We're practicing connecting.
Right. And it feels to me, too, that what you were saying earlier, that maybe before we communicate what we want or what we expect or what we don't expect, we need to get really clear about why. Like you were saying, if we've had a history of really bad sex, then we assume we never want sex again, but maybe we need to rethink that conclusion.
At least be able to ask the right questions. Going back to the people that we're going out with are probably as uneducated as we are. And for them, having a conversation might feel just as awkward. But what I want to look for and coach my clients in is there a willingness? So let's say we were going out, Laura, and I start, you know, I might say, oh, I noticed my heart's beating really fast, but I'm really enjoying spending time with you. And I feel like we're moving toward more intimacy. And I'd really like to talk about what that might look like for you. Are you interested?
That's bold. No, I mean, I think it's funny because as we've gotten older, especially those of us who have had previous committed relationships, it almost feels like you do need to be bold. You need to just be open and just really put it on the table about what you're interested in or how you're feeling.
Right. But with that, also kind of move out of your head. So it's like, rather than coming from my history, I want to find kind of this authentic. It's almost like moving your awareness from your brain to your heart. Like, this is another human being. I may not want to go out with this person again, or maybe in this conversation, we might learn more about each other and that's it. But if I say, are you interested? And you say, oh no, that's just too uncomfortable for me. It's not going to be easy to talk about those things once we become more intimate. So somebody can be uncomfortable, but willingness is what will take you a long way.
Uncoupling your brain from your body, or uncoupling that history that we all have running through our heads with how we actually are feeling in the moment, to be able to propel us forward in some direction or another. I mean, if people don't want to have sex, neither one of us is saying, oh, you got to want it. But it's interesting to me to really kind of think of it in more, I don't know, is it a logical term or is it more practical term?
I would describe it in more of a heart-centered way. One colleague that had some podcasts I enjoyed quite a while ago, he talked about coming into every date as if it was the only date. So rather than coming like with this list of like, you meet this, you don't meet this, I'm already not interested. It's like, you're another human being. What can I learn about myself in your presence? And what can I learn about you? So the whole engagement, whether we go on one date and that's it, or we go on 15 dates and get married, whatever. I want to practice showing up in a way that's real and not contrived. That's a journey, which makes me want to rewind a little to really taking some time to do some self-study. Maybe ask your friends, it's like, what do I really want? So the more you can get clear with your own longing, the more you can have meaningful moments with people that you're dating, even if you know it's not going to go any farther. But it's meaningful for both of you. Sex with yourself or getting comfortable with your own body might prepare you to be able to create more of what you want with a partner. I remember being on a plane just a few months ago, and I was sitting next to him. As soon as somebody finds out what I do, it either begins a conversation or ends a conversation, but oftentimes it begins it because so few people have felt really safe about talking about the intimate aspects of their lives. This man was talking about how his partner wasn't having sex with him at all. And so, you know, we talked about how to have that conversation to find out what was really going on there. And to be in those awkward conversations and stay with it. You know, I think one of the impediments, even in long-term relationship, is somebody wants to talk about something and the other partner says, I don't want to talk about that right now. And you go away. Well, basically what you're demonstrating is it's not that important to you. But another thing to say if someone says that is, tell me more about not wanting to talk about it. So I'm not focused on the objective about getting you to do what I want you to do. I want to get to know you. And I think that's, again, where a lot of these conversations go south, because when a partner that maybe is the high desire wants more sex, that's what they're talking about. They want to find out what you want, how to do that. And they don't have the skill to be able to create the connection where their partner might feel safe talking about what's underneath that.
Right. It's interesting because I think when you get down to it, mismatched expectations, especially around sex, might be the biggest stress point in romantic relationships.
Yeah, a disparate desire. We call that disparate desire. Sustainable intimacy in the long term is you got to be friends, which kind of sounds like a no-brainer, but I can tell you how many people I've worked with, they're complaining about not having sex with someone that they don't like. And, you know, kind of one of the first things I said when we started speaking is oftentimes the sex that they've been having isn't worth wanting. So it's easier to withdraw. You know, it could be with someone that you love very much, but, you know, after 25, 30 years, it's really frightening to say, you know, sex has never been pleasurable for me. So it's easier to withdraw. I also see that with sexual function issues. There's a lot of shame around sexual function issues, so it's easier to withdraw than to have those conversations. We all are nourished by touch, but oftentimes the partner that's more frightened or more reticent, if I hug you or touch you, you're going to think I want to be sexual, and I don't want to be sexual, so I withdraw. And so everybody's living in a desert then.
Physiologically, is the body capable of becoming sexual again? Is it use it or lose it? If we haven't used it, have we lost it?
Yes and no. I mean, the no is there's like so much variation. Lube is always good. I want men and women that are listening to this that know lube is always good. Not having lubrication doesn't mean anything about you or your partner. You know, you want to be comfortable. And also take into consideration the kind of physical limitations that we have as we get older. Knees and hips and shoulders. So there are many ways to navigate that with cushions or the kinds of behaviors that you want to engage in. But I want to open the window about what are the kinds of behaviors and connections that you can have that actually create desire and satisfaction. And I say satisfaction in contrast to orgasm. Many women have never had an orgasm with a partner or have never had an orgasm in their life. And the stress of some partner expecting to do that, that inhibits pleasure. Nothing inhibits pleasure more effectively than anxiety. So I coach people in unpacking their unconscious objectives and focus more on pleasure. It's possible to access incredibly satisfying and transcendent states as one begins to reimagine and re-experience how they use their bodies. You know, can I breathe more deeply? Can I focus on sensation rather than this list of anxiety in my mind and what I'm doing and what you're doing and what we're supposed to do? Learn how to practice being in your body. And that sounds like a no-brainer, but so often we're not. This is what worked with every woman since I've been in ninth grade. This is what my former partner enjoyed. You know? So we're in our heads. I'd like to encourage people to really express themselves through their bodies to experience their partner, and that would be it.
Anna Marti also reminds us there are no right or wrong answers to questions about personal desires and preferences for sexual intimacy. The important thing is that we take time to figure out what we want. Then we need to get comfortable communicating on the topic, not only with potential partners, but also with our healthcare providers. Studies have shown that sexual health and intimacy are under-discussed topics. And by the way, it's not just patients who are reluctant to discuss them. Back to Kate in Canada. She reports that while she's been, quote, slow to rip off the Band-Aid and start dating, she's feeling good. She's going out with friends and having fun. Sounds to me like Kate's building a satisfying life for herself, a necessary step before opening herself up to anyone else. Dating While Grace audio production and mix is by Steve Lack Audio. Theme music by D. Peterschmidt. please like and follow Dating While Gray wherever you get podcasts. That way, you'll never miss an episode. And if you're so inclined, leave a review letting everyone know what you love about us. For more on the show, check out datingwhilegray.com. That's where you can find the Dating While Gray archive of episodes. You can also find links to send me questions, comments, tips, and true stories through email and voicemail. You know I love hearing from you. While you're there, sign up for the free Dating While Gray e-newsletter delivered every Friday to your inbox. That's datingwhilegray.com. I'm Laura Stassi. Thanks so much for listening.